Hey, look at you. Florist by day, student by night, student by day, nurse by night. Since 1998, Penn State World Campus has led the charge in online education, offering access to more than 200 degree and certificate programs taught by our expert faculty. We offer flexible schedules, scholarships, and tuition plans to help you reach your educational goals online. Penn State World Campus delivers on your time. Click the ad or visit worldcampus.psu.edu to learn more.
This is Corolla Digital.
Hi, I'm Larry Miller, but in a way, aren't we all? And this week, on This Week with Larry Miller, I tell you about the greatest Christmas gift I ever got anyone. It was for Uncle Arnie. Was it a music box or was it coffee? You can find out by going to LarryMillerPodcast.com. We'll see you here.
Now, it's time for this week's CarCast with your host, Adam Carolla, and Motorator Matt DeAndrea.
Yeah, get it on. Got to get it on. No choice but to get it on. Mandate. Get it on. And welcome to yet another... Oh, wait a minute. This is a CarCast.
This is CarCast.
I'm doing too many podcasts these days.
We do.
CarCast. Yep. Matt, the moderator. DeAndrea over there.
Hello.
Jonathan Ward from Icon and TLC.
Jonathan's my favorite car geek.
You guys must be getting to the bottom of the barrel. You got me back again.
Yeah, we're laughing ourselves now.
Now what do we do?
Well, we're like a band that has four songs.
I got lazy with booking people. I was like, let's just get Jonathan. He's local. Call him up.
No, I got.
He's good for a show.
He's a slut.
We're going to brag about Jonathan a little, and then I'm going to let Jonathan brag about me. No, himself. Couple of things. We always have said we love Jonathan's work because of how meticulous it is, but how understated it is. And what really the best part about this hobby is when you come up on something and you start noticing the little bits and the little pieces and the stuff you wouldn't have thought of and the stuff but it's so easy just to have taken the original part, put a coat of nickel on it and put it back. But no, Jonathan made his own. And
it takes about, how can I spend 100 hours machining a side mirror?
Jonathan's stuff is the exact opposite of a lot of guys' stuff, which is from across the street, it looks really good because it's candy apple, whatever. And then you pop the hood and it's all bone stock under there and some of the hoses are not right. And they're too new for the car and there's too much braided something. And it's not right. It looks good going 60 miles an hour or across the street. Jonathan's stuff's always very muted and sort of subtle and quiet, but you get up on it.
Yeah, they're like onions.
Yeah. So there's layers.
You peel back and absorb.
And the
more
stuff looks amazing. And I don't know if you started with the Broncos or you started with the Toyotas. What did you start with?
Well, we went from the TLC brand's foundation and the Land Cruisers. So when we started up the idea for Icon, we started with the FJs.
I've talked to a couple of dudes. Jimmy Kimmel was one of them, and a couple other celebrities. Where they went, they were talking about the old. I don't know why. For some reason, non-car guys like the old Broncos and the old Toyota Land Cruisers and the old. They for some reason, maybe it's the Tonka truck in all of us or something.
It was kind of the only cool sort of SUV, I guess, at the time. Really, like what else? Well, cool.
These celebrity guys who don't know shit about cars and don't even really like cars love these cars. I guess like they want to drive an SUV. They want some. So I've talked to I know it was Jimmy Kimmel and then the other guy was Seth MacFarlane or something. I can't remember the guy, but they I said, have you checked out Icon? And they're like, yeah, I checked. I went online or I went down there. Maybe it was Dax Shepard or somebody like that.
Right.
But you must have bragged a little. You must have had a celebrity or two walk through that place, because I've talked to a few guys that said they went down there and checked it out.
We have a wildly diverse customer base. So not so much of like the NBA baller, new money, got my 20 mil contract, because those guys all seem to gravitate to, okay, I have to get something that everyone else is going to know. I got the money.
Right.
So it's the Lamborghini, right, the Bentley and all that. But you're right in that it's either like an evolved palate hypercar geek.
Yes.
Or like it's someone who drives a Prius every day and has no connection to it. But I think it all ties back to story, because pretty much everything that we do, I'm cheating, because they're vehicles that are already kind of in people's hearts and minds. So it could have been a negative experience or a positive experience. The cooler guy in school had the Bronco. Or on a trip through Mexico, they lived in their FJ and it saved their ass. Or even if it broke down and stranded them somewhere, there's like that sort of life experience thing that people get warm fuzzies and kind of want to revisit that time and place.
I like to go to my auction sites and see what's going on. Arizona's coming up. I can't remember if it was Meekum or whatever it was, but I think it was maybe Gooding or something, or maybe RM. Somebody's got a FJ.
Bonhams. Yeah, Bonhams has what looks like a
fucking one I didn't mention.
Nice
asshole.
You think Todd didn't know?
Yeah, they have a 7740, and it's funny, like in the years
I think
past.
Well, hold on. I think there's a Toyota. Well, now we got to look if it's a Land Cruiser. No, it's a FJ. Whatever. I'm all screwed up. I never really gave a shit about four-wheel drive, so I'm never really that into it. But one of them, and maybe it is Bonham, and maybe there's another one too. I think it's Gooding that gives you the price range. I think it's 40 to 60 on just
Bonhams.
Is it Bonhams?
It's Bonhams. Because I looked at my friend has two
is
cars.
Is it blue?
And that, yeah, it's blue and it's missing a hard top. But it's funny, like
what
2 year
years
ago, 77 or 8, it's lot
okay.
number.
Now we're going to have to find it.
200, something.
If you get this wrong, I'm going to be so mad.
Which
lot number?
I'm sure it's Bonhams. I'm not
going
sure
with
on the lot number. But,
all right.
But it's funny because like 5 years ago, you wouldn't see cruisers at an auction. And then I don't know what happened, but about a year ago, they started getting some serious love at the mainstream auctions, which is good and bad, because now every idiot with a rusted tramp in the backyard, suddenly it's dipped in gold and I can't buy anything.
It's like
– right. So they have this – you used to be – what you need is the – carcass, or as I like to call it, the truckus.
Yeah.
you need that shell.
Yeah.
And the shell used to be worth next to nothing because it was worth next to nothing.
Yep.
And now people go, what? That thing sold for $68,000? And it's like, that's not the one that's in your backyard rotting.
Yeah.
But they start seeing dollar signs. And
right.
They're like, well, if I put 10 into this, I could get 65 out. So I'll sell it to you, Jonathan, for 50.
Yep.
So I know that. I know that kind of hurts you because of what you're doing with rebuilding these things. But Adam and I have talked about this a bunch of times. We're looking at like these really, really high dollar cars and they become unattainable. So they start dragging up all of the lesser models of cars. And then those are starting to get real expensive. And I kind of feel like even though a 190 SL has nothing to do with a Bronco, but that those Broncos and stuff are starting to move because now, like, what are the entry level auction cars or the cars you start collecting that are kind of cool and old? And
no one wanted a magnesium block 912. You couldn't give it away, and suddenly they're 20, 30 grand. Like,
the Porsches are going bananas. The whole, well, you know what it's like? It's like the housing market where you go, okay, this is a modern house, this is a colonial house, and this is an old Spanish house. Yeah, but if they're all going up, they're all going up. That's kind of what's going on in the car world. And 190 is a million miles away from a Bronco. But if they're all going up, they're all going up.
You ever own a 190 SL?
No.
All right. So I love the look of them.
Yeah.
But it is such a chick car.
Oh, yeah.
They suck to drive. And again, suddenly they're 150 grand because their big brother, the 300, is pulling stronger numbers. So then, like you're saying, it all ties back. But like I keep biting myself in the ass by launching a new model based on another classic and never have the money to chipmunk like 30 or 40 of them before we start driving the market up.
Right.
So
now the Chevy truck suddenly like every – pile of poo out there. It's $2,000-$3,000.
Which Chevy truck?
Well, we just launched a new model that's we did with GM based on the 47 to 53 3100 series pickup that we're somewhat ironically calling the Thrift Master.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, right around here, like Pacoima, Sun Valley, like people a year ago would pay you to dredge it out of their backyard and help them clean up the brush fire.
Right.
And then suddenly they're just going nuts.
What are they doing as far as the repop stuff, fenders, hoods, doors, things like that?
And it's interesting, you know, where, at least in my humble opinion, a lot of the repop stuff, the quality is so substandard that if you're going to use one or two panels, you can get away with it. If you're going to try and build the whole car using the repops, it's rearranging deck chairs on the Titanic and you're screwed. Nothing fits.
Why? I don't get it.
Entire repop bodies, too. Like, there's, you know, there's Mustang unibodies, Camaro unibodies.
Here comes
unibodies.
My rant. All right.
Go.
So the problem is, in my opinion, is that the company that is strongest in that market has all the relationships with the OEMs, and they cut the check. Up till now, all the OEMs, they're all guilty of it. If your check clears, your license, there's no QC for it.
Mm-hmm.
And it actually it frustrates the hell out of me.
No quality control.
No quality control at all. So they'll literally make the deal and then they run off to Taiwan or China and reverse engineer it with a shoestring and Play-Doh and then put all the panels together and ship them to the market. Well, they are, to their credit, getting better at it in that they're at least pre-assembling fixture and jigging them. So at least at one time, if no more, they at least build the whole car and have some visibility of what's viable and what needs further work.
Uh-huh.
But for a while, there was a big disconnect between the manufacturer, the distributor, and the retailer. And, you know, companies like Carpenter that, you know, has been making Ford repop, you know, emblems and glass and stuff, suddenly their return went through the roof. And Danny there's like, wait a minute. We've been selling this stuff for years, never had a problem. And they tracked it back. So like when the Mustang bodies first came to market.
Oh, people were returning stuff because it wasn't fitting
the repop
stuff wasn't set right.
Exactly, it was the repop bodies the problem. And I mean glass and pillars being off, it's just a train wreck. But we work with a company called Premier in Lake Havasu that receives those bodies from that parent supplier and then has their own quality control and refinement. Kind of like what were they called? Those Swiss guys that were doing the 32 Highboy bodies, they were taking them in and taking them up a notch and then reselling them.
Mm-hmm.
So fortunately, they're there and that made a big difference. So the extent of available parts for that Chevy truck is mind-blowing. I mean, just you can get – literally, we got everything we needed brand new with the exception of the garnish molding around the windshield frame. Everything else was readily available.
How much of the truck do you usually keep as far as original truck?
Well, for sort of proof of concept and getting all of our engineering mapped out, we use an entirely new body and we literally took just a section of the original firewall so that legally we could keep it as a 1950s Chevy.
Yeah, which is the other issue with the repop bodies, but that's a whole other conversation. It's like, how do you
That's know, getting better, though. There's a lot of legal efforts going, mostly
how do you register them?
Yeah, mostly due to SEMA. They've really been paving the road for that.
Jonathan, we've talked to you many times. We're always talking about all the cool off-roady and truck stuffy, but I know you like everything. Is there a car? Oh, there's.
Is that the blue?
There's
that's an 83.
That's a different one.
That's a different one.
That's worth more than their all right,
but that,
estimate of 60
That's grand. The one I was looking at.
That's so, the holy grail right
so
there.
So the 83 FJ,
that's the
they're
shit.
Saying 40 to 60 grand. You're saying it's worth more than that.
Way more. So 83 is the last year for North American distribution. There were 250 of them is the number that I've been given most consistently by Toyota made. Out of that 250, 50 of them had power steering and AC. So that truck, other than those cheesy Pep Boys wheels, is a really good, at least visually from here, representation of a stalker.
Uh-huh.
Which is nice, you know, uncut fenders and all that.
So you're saying it's worth more than 60, which is the top of their thing.
Yeah, definitely. So the 83s
it's
are
a cool looking truck, though. I like it.
What do you think
cool
it's worth?
You know, the looks of them were fairly consistent all the way back to the early, late 50s.
What do you think it's worth?
The last 83 I had was a 45,000 mile original one with power steering and AC unrestored, and it sold in about 2 hours for 72,000.
Uh huh. Well, with buyer's premium. Maybe. That's interesting. So I was asked, so that's the one I was talking about, but they're both blue.
Yeah.
That's why we got
confused. We're both redeemed.
Well, not quite yet, because we haven't found yours. But what do you want to do that does not have a bed in the back of it or does not
Well, you're
carry,
doing the derelicts.
Carry yeah, people a lot up of, the mountain.
So we have our, using the term quite loosely, production models based on the Bronco, the FJ, and the CJs, and now the Chevy truck, the Thriftmaster. But we're doing more and more of our sort of crazy skunkwork cars, the derelicts and reformers. And the vast majority of those have been passenger cars.
You remember the derelict you brought us, the wagon.
The wagon.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, that was really cool. But that was one-off as far as I,
yeah, all
I
the,
know.
All the DNRs are one-off.
Is there any part of you that wants to get hold of, I don't know, you do a Toyota, how about a 240Z? There's a lot of 240Z carcasses out there. It's a great platform to jump off on. If somebody said, Jonathan's doing a 240Z, yeah, I'd be very excited. It's a sort of poor man's Magnus Walker's version,
right,
of take a cool platform. Mm-hmm. In his case, 911, but I don't think the Z, the early model Z, is any, is right up there with the 911 just in terms of you bring that thing down to just the tub.
Right.
It's a pretty good place to jump off.
Yeah, very much
from.
So.
Now,
before you answer that question.
Engine compartment in there.
Before you answer that question, you're about to change the market of the 240Z. Well, if everyone thinks Jonathan Ward's going to go out and start buying their car.
Off the top of my head, but that would be a car that if Jonathan said, I got aluminum small block in here, and we redid all this, and we did all that to it, I'd be like, wow.
Right.
Let's put a JDM all-wheel drive Skyline powertrain.
Or, I just want to see it with your attention to detail.
I want to do a 2002. Okay. I'm a huge fan of the Volvo P1800s, and in fact, the Sport Wagon from 73 is one of my killer favorites. In fact, a client just authorized that job, so we bought a 62, which is the Jensen-bodied earliest version of the P1800, which I think has the sexier egg crate grill and the cool boomerang bumpers.
Oh, now we got to
see that
car. Kick-ass
gauges and door panels.
Yeah.
So what we're going to do is build the 1800 ES Sport Wagon as if it had been built when they launched the P1800 Coupe in 62. So we're going to take all the front clip and interior details of the earliest generation, marry it with the Sport Wagon, and then probably run that new I can't believe I'm going to say sexy four-banger, but I actually combine those words. That's running in the new Mustang GT for 2015.
That is a really cool car, that Volvo. And what was the Volvo? I think it had a vinyl roof on it, but they made a chopped Volvo.
The Bertone.
Yeah,
yeah,
the Bertone.
Those are so cool in the wrong way.
They literally just came out with a factory chopped station wagon, which is, A, it's Volvo, so it's weird. I mean, that Volvo, who's supposed to be Volvo, is, but they did a wagon and they did a chopped.
Is that, that's the.
I've never seen the chopped wagon, but that's the Bertone coupe.
That's a coupe? It really is. It's kind of a chopped top, right?
Oh, yeah. I'm pretty sure they did a chopped wagon. Maybe I'm making that up.
It needs to be tubbed.
Chubbed?
Right?
Yeah.
In the front?
Yeah. Maybe it was just the coupe. Maybe it was that. But I swear to you, I've seen a wagon that was chopped. But it was a weird thing to offer. From a factory, a chopped
so not,
top
not a
Volvo.
Conversion, not a you don't think maybe you saw some custom.
Well, you know the thing though that at Volvo that's interesting. A lot of their executives have been with that company through multiple corporate ownerships and like have been there long term. And those guys still yield a fair amount of power when it comes to special projects. So like the P1800 was the brainchild of two guys on the staff who said, "Okay, fine, we're safe, we're reliable. That's boring. We need to sexy it up. Let's do a sports car." And then that allowed them to do the P1800, where if you look at the 544, or the 444, the Amazon, or any of the other models of that era, it almost had no continuity, but it did a lot for the brand. And I think they've been kind of keeping that alive. They just launched that new one that's total wolf in sheep's clothing sedan that's just balls out fast.
The all-wheel drive?
Yeah, I don't remember. It's too new to hold my attention. But
The one I keep seeing that's all like Smurf blue kind of color.
Yeah,
They keep showing the press car
and
that.
What was the Saab you were talking about?
I like the Sonnets and all that, but
is that the little fiberglass one?
Yeah.
Those things were... They were probably gutless, but they were kind of cool looking back in the day. Kind of remind me of the Opel K Cadet? Was it the Opel Cadet?
I remember. Yeah, the Opel Cadet. I had a sexy MILF neighbor as a young kid who drove one of those, so it's sort of locked in my brain.
The Saab song.
I had
look
a cool swinging. I had the
what's
assistant
the
football coach in Pop Warner, the single dude, you know, with the cool, had one of those in orange, which was really cool. But I fear now that they probably had a 1400 pushrod single carbureted whatever on there that was good for 81 horsepower or something.
So I mean, kind of gutless.
I'm sure they were
gutless.
But for me, that makes it even more fun. Well, that's the opportunity.
That ain't staying. Right, right. But I would like to find out what those things, Jeff, came with stock. See the orange one in the middle there? Orange one in the middle. Yeah. Like what? I would be surprised if those things had more than 1,600 cc's and put out more than 100 horsepower. I'm going to go that it was under 100 and under 1,600.
Yeah. Now, Jonathan, you say you want to do the Volvo with the four-cylinder EcoBoost Ford engine. Yep. You know, the 2015 Mustang you mentioned is going to have this engine. I think it's like 300 horsepower.
Yeah, yeah.
Like turbocharged.
Oh, it is?
300 horsepower. Yeah.
And it actually sounds good.
I thought it was
going to
be a V6.
Oh, they're doing that as
here's
well.
The deal. So the new 2015 Mustang is going to have the same V8 that like you've been putting in the Broncos. Yeah. They're going to have the V6, which is like 300 horsepower.
Right.
And then the Turbo 4, which is 300 horsepower.
Oh, I didn't know
the
about
V6
the Turbo
really
4.
Is just so you can make rental cars.
Right, the Turbo right. 4 is going to be a 2.0.
Oh, I don't know.
I remember the displacement. Yeah. What was really cool about it is that usually they sound horrible, but they did this really cool bypass system in the exhaust prior to the turbo so it doesn't turn it into that sort of tin can Hummer. And it actually, it's the coolest sounding four banger I think I've ever heard.
Well, I kind of liked the Mustang, the SVO. The Turbo 4 and the idea of having a Turbo 4 now, if it's already 300 horsepower, the aftermarket will make it 450, 480 in no time.
Yeah, fun.
And if it really is lighter and lighter than the 8-cylinder, especially just on the nose of the car, that's a badass little car.
It's always fun. It's why I like that old Porsche 944 Turbo with the 250 horsepower way back, I don't know, 88, whatever it was. But wringing a bunch of horsepower out of small displacement is, you know, what's F1?
Right. It always sounds better.
F1 is always almost no displacement with massive amounts of horsepower and zero torque at 11,000 RPM. I mean, what's cooler sounding than that?
You know, anything up into those digits of RPMs just makes you giggle.
Yeah. The opposite of that is just, you know, huge displacement with light on the horsepower, which is, you know, it's a tugboat engine or something.
Right.
So to me, I love that idea. And the reason I like it that way as well is it makes you drive it in a much more sporting fashion, because if you take a 2-liter motor, and this is probably 2.5, but if you take a 2-liter motor that's getting 300 horsepower, the only way, and if you look at that dyno chart, at 4,000 RPM, it didn't make it a lot of horsepower. You got to get it up there.
6K north full time. Yeah.
To get it. So when you want to have fun, you really have to drive it. I mean, you got to shift at the rev limiter. Otherwise, you're not getting that 300.
Yeah. I tell you, on that Mustang specifically, I went to one of the launch events for that car. And in person, that's a good-looking car. The lines are great. It really starts to look like the fit and finish and the lines and the quality of you'd expect at something, you know, way more expensive now.
Yeah,
it really is M3 Terra.
Put all those driver controls all in that one central bank finally. Yeah. I never understood why they did that on the prior gens. They were kind of all over the place.
Yeah.
Really good team. That
Saab Sonnet?
The Saab Sonnet. What did we find out? The Saab Sonnet 3. We'll try to figure this one out.
65 whopping horsepower at 2,500.
What size was the engine?
It's a 65 neck snapping horsepower.
And that was the big boy. The Les Deluxe had the 60 horse.
Yeah.
Oh, there's a 55 horse.
And what are we talking about motor-wise? Normally, I just check out the bore and the stroke.
1.5.
Quick calcs.
1.5 liter.
I knew it was 1.5.
How about a Hayabusa?
Oh, I forgot it's a fucking V4.
It's a V4.
Let's put two Hayabusas, turn into a V8, and party on.
Have you seen that video where the guy puts the Hayabusa engine in the the smart car,
yes,
and
yes.
he starts doing like endos and spinning
really?
Around. Yeah, it's a crazy video.
I love
it. It sounds nuts.
Yeah, Dennis, the engineer behind that, and the guy's just a genius with those motors.
He has like wheelie bar, like not wheelie bars, but like skid plates in the front, and because it's front wheel drive, and it like on a motorcycle, he starts hauling ass and then hits the brake and it slides on its front bumper.
But his wife's pissed.
Have you seen that company? I think they're in Orange County. That's rebodying smart cars
to
into
what?
Like it's. Hysterical. Like, I thought it was Photoshop.
The wagon?
Joke. No, like, you can get a Gallardo smart car.
Yeah.
Or they're doing, you know,
it looks
whatever,
like
Porsche
those micro machines.
Totally.
Place.
It looks just like a micro
looks
machine
like your
in
kid's
their daily
bed.
Drivers.
the thing that stands out the most to me about the smart cars, all I remember is at some point I was reading and I was like, Volkswagen diesel Jetta gets 41 miles to the gallon.
Yeah.
And the smart car gets 36 miles to the gallon. And I remember seeing that going, well, what the fuck? You have four doors, you can put four people and a gas tank and a crumple zone around you. But
and you won't get laughed at.
Yeah, why wouldn't you get the Jetta? The only reason, if the smart car got 72 miles to the gallon and then the Jetta got 41, you'd be like, But 41 versus 36, what are we thinking about? And when we talked, I think the guy from Edmonds.
Yeah, Dan Edmonds was on. He's like, I think it's the worst car on the road.
We just
I don't want to get hit by anything in that car.
I just said to him, but it wasn't even a safety thing. We just said, what is, in this day and age of everything working, meaning you get a Ford Fiesta, that's fine. The air condition works, the electronics.
Now that the Yugo is gone, everything kind of works.
I mean, it just works. You could drive. You could give that car to your kid. It'd be safe. They could drive it around. It would work. It would be reliable and so on and so forth. I said, well, what have you tested that's no good in this day and age? And he just went, smart car. Like he said, there's only one car that really sucked.
I think it's the only car that the driving design mandate was parking.
Right.
So if you design a car about being the best car to park, you're fucked from launch, right? It's not going to go anywhere. I was just in Italy on that Aston Martin we're building, and Paolo Spada, my co-designer on it, that's what he drives because in Torino, parking is the priority.
Mm-hmm.
But, man, we went out to Horatio Pagani's factory, and that thing's like a two-hour drive. And it's the only car I've ever been moving on at freeway speeds where your sphincter retracts when a bird flies too close to you because you might get hurt.
That's right. It's going to go right through you.
So is you guys out here in the valley, I remember when you were – up the street from Valley Sash and Door, which I used to go to all the time. And if somebody – so there's the businesses where you do this sort of turnkey stuff, stage one, stage two, or stage three. Don't let me put words in your mouth, but I mean where you can sell the stuff that you're making. And then there's the business where people bring something in and you guys sit down and go, here's what I want. Is that just a time and material thing?
Yes. I mean, it's even more complicated because you've got TLC and then you have Icon. So with TLC, it's anything pertaining to vintage Toyota Land Cruisers. So sales, service, parts, design, restos, whatever. And that ranges on a daily basis from literally an oil change for people to calling me up and saying, I was born in 64 and I want a 64 Land Cruiser as new or stock or modified or whatever. And then we also buy, recondition, and resell vintage Land Cruisers and the occasional Bronco through TLC. Icon's a little bit more standardized in that the turnkey trucks on the production range that we offer, there's like a set menu of options that the client can pick from and then geek out in different cul-de-sacs that work better in their life. And then the DNRs, the derelicts and reformers, are the ones that are time and materials, just balls out customs. And
like the derelicts and stuff, do people come to you with a car and you're like, make one of your derelicts? Or do you usually have a client base and they're like, I got an idea for this kind of wagon or this kind of coupe?
More and more I've been trying to do that. And occasionally I'll drink one too many scotches late at night on eBay or Craigslist and I'll just buy something because I'm a geek and I have to have it. So then the next newsletter we do, I'm like, all right. Who thinks this could be cool? Before my wife kills me. But it's worked pretty well. But mostly people just come to us with the idea. Sometimes it's just an affinity for vintage aesthetic, but not having any patience for the archaic mechanical and understanding our engineering focus. Or the, I'd say arguably the more fun cases are like we're doing a 48 Buick Super Convertible right now. And the guy came to us with a vintage Instamatic picture. And he's like, my dad recently died and he was never around. He was traveling sort of salesman deal. But when he'd come back, he'd honk the horn. He'd pull into the driveway in this car and he'd open the trunk and always have gifts for us kids. And he goes, and I want to kind of revisit and relive that moment, that memory. And we have three hunters that scour the land to find the cars for the clients. And took us about a year to find the right patinaed 48 Super in that Celadane green to really match the guy's vision. Those are my favorite.
His hunters.
What would be – I like that gig.
Yeah.
What would be, before we go out and visit what you brought us, obviously, you're getting these carcasses, as we said, and you just can't afford to pay 200 grand for a carcass because then you got to put another 200 grand into it. But if you just money was no option and you could just jump off of any point, is there – give us three cars in the world. You can say a Gullwing. Gullwing. Now, Gullwing's selling for $1.5 million, but right. I'm saying forget about right. money. You jump off – and you can get hold of this thing and breathe on it and do whatever you want to it. Give us three that you would do.
Aston Martin Lagonda Series 3, which is a car everyone loves to hate, but I dig them.
Wait a minute. That's the...
The folded paper, funky four-door...
Yeah.
Yeah. Love that car.
Bo Bachman's got eight of those. Yeah. I could probably get you one.
Bo and I, just last week, Bo was showing me one of his, and he's like... I guess I'd sell it to you. Just the fact that somebody else wants it inspires
me. It's a crazy car.
Here's the thing about Bo is you walk around with him in his museum, no matter how wacky it is, and you're like, what, would you sell that? He's like, it's a car dealer. Everything's for sale. Yeah. Everything's for sale here, buddy.
It's a car that's out of the show Thunderbirds, basically. If you ever see the super marionation of Thunderbirds, a TV show from like Britain in the 60s or 70s or something. Yeah. That's kind of what the car looks like. All right, so that's crazy.
It's not that good looking of a car.
Oh, it would be.
But I believe you.
You could that steering wheel.
You could pick something up. All right.
Next one. Cord Sportsman 210 Phaeton. Love that car.
Now we're talking 40s here?
Yeah,
30s here. What do you think that thing?
Well, you know, it's a sad story. There was one that came up at some auction like in Kansas that had been traded into a Cadillac dealer back in the day because they were front-wheel drive, very innovative car, but kind of a mechanical clusterfuck. And the car had a terminal failure in the front drive. So the guy took it in on trade for a new Caddy. Then he took a client's Caddy that got wrecked and took the entire 53 Caddy chassis and dropped the cord on top. Mm-hmm. So all the bets were off. No one could chew my ass for modifying such a gold standard car.
Right.
And it was the original black paint and red leather patina, bitchin'. And we figured, okay, it's such a bastard. No one's going to want it. So we're going to get it. So I had a client all lined up. We put money into their silly little escrow account or whatever to bid. And apparently we were wrong. So we got outbid at like $78,200.
For the one that was on the Cadillac.
Yeah.
It was the Cadillac.
And I was dying to do that build. It would have been so kick-ass. And then I'd love to do the Voisin the Voisin Aerodynamic
the
coupe.
French style and the aerodynamic
styles. An incredible, innovative aircraft engineer, him and his brother, before he passed. So they flew before the Wright brothers did.
Yeah, so those... The French were into the crazy aerodynamic stuff.
Oh, brilliant. Kick ass. That blue and white coupe right there. So that thing is a two-stroke
black
motor.
Black and white one?
Second row down. Right, there you go. That one.
That's it.
Yeah.
Bitchin'.
Crazy looking.
It has a two-stroke motor where the back seat could have been, except for they put a two-stroke there.
Oh,
that
really?
That powers the top on cast stainless T-rails.
Wow.
And the top scrolls back into the trunk.
Wow.
That motor
just powers the top?
That's it.
What powers the car?
I think it's got a big-ass straight six in it.
Sounds about right. Yeah, the French did some crazy aero stuff in the 30s that was just – I mean, obviously, and that stuff is millions of dollars now, most of it.
Yeah. If I had to pick an era of design across all sectors, that streamlined, modern, deco era. You know, it happened in trans. It never got fully matured, so – I've been plaguing myself with a theoretical that is leading me to want to design our first car from scratch.
Mm-hmm. That was going to be my next question.
Yeah, which if you took Streamline, Moderne, and Transportation, it never fully matured because of the perversions of Industrial Revolution combined with the austerity brought on by the Depression. So what if history had been different and that language, starting with like the Chrysler Airflows, you know, where would that have gone? So I've been penning a car for a while we want to call the Helios, which is the Greek god of wind. Mm-hmm. That is sort of Buck Rogers, steampunk aircraft, Howard Hughes,
right.
Funky. I want to make that.
Yeah, yeah.
So, but how do you do it? Not kind of. I don't want to pick on Morgan, but not mess it up like a Morgan, where you've got like a very swoopy old style body, but then you've got like brand new BBS wheels and a Kenwood stereo.
Why is a Morgan messed up?
You well, mean the Morgan
I'm
Arrow,
the new I'm the with, new Morgan is like it's still got the old lines, but it has like a brand new BBS wheel.
Yeah,
or something
but
on
that's
it.
Just what it is. I mean,
it
I
is. But
know.
I'm saying, how do you not end up?
I don't
just
label
something
them a
give
new
me,
Morgan.
Like give me
up.
A lot of your money, and I will show you. Like I can picture every detail of that damn car in my head. It's been keeping me up lately.
Somebody I saw, I can't remember who did it, but I saw it on Top Gear that they took the Jag, you know, XK and did the modern whatever in terms of jumping off platforms.
Eagle is the company out of England. Yeah,
pretty cool.
Yeah, well executed.
Pretty cool jumping off. Pretty good platform to jump off of.
Yeah.
All right. Speaking of jumping off, we're going to jump off and we're going to go to the parking lot. Go ahead and give some plugs, Matt.
Yeah. You know, first off, check us out on Facebook at facebook.com/carcastshow. All the photos and stuff that are up there, you know, for these shows are up there. Hit us up on Twitter at carcastshow as well. And Amazon. How about Amazon, right? You're doing your Christmas shopping?
Yep.
Buying
I've
some
been
car
rocking
parts.
Amazon a lot lately.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Books on Amazon that no one else has.
This is what you do, Jonathan.
Us, man.
You go to carcastshow.com, click on the Amazon banner, buy all your books. We get a little something-something, and it costs you nothing.
Oh, okay.
That's the way to go. And PayPal. Want to donate to the show? Because a lot of guys bringing cool cars, some of them flatbedding, you know, race cars and over. You know, it's a lot of effort going into the show. Matt's busting his hump, and if you'd like to help out, then you can help out. Hit the go to
carcastshow.com.
Also, as well, if you want a little mangria, it's available at CorollaDrinks.com and the store, AdamCorolla.com/store for the new hats and mugs and cool T-shirts and all that stuff. All right, let's head out with Jonathan Ward and check out what he brought us. How fast you go from not going to 80 miles an hour
that's
on the freeway. That's
yeah.
where you feel it. So you fly commercially, you fly 550 miles an hour. It doesn't feel like anything.
Right.
That's
no,
what you're moving
does
at.
It this change feeling its rate of speed.
Is right. the feeling.
And that's where like the electric Tesla, can though. Be really fun.
We
oh,
did
yeah.
Like the
you
want to
walk
yeah.
into it?
Yeah.
All right. Jonathan always brings us something cool, and today did not disappoint. What do we call it?
We call it the Icon Thriftmaster because that's what the Motor Series was on the originals, and frankly, because I liked the font.
Did they really call the Motor Series a Thriftmaster?
They did, yeah. And then when the trucks first came out, I think for the first 2 years, on that stock Chevrolet side badging, it said Thriftmaster, and then they changed it to 3100.
Did they call it the Thriftmaster? Because normally they go with Eliminator, Intruder, Turbine, whatever, something. Thrift, you know, you're kind of going another direction there. But were they saying that because it was good on fuel?
Yeah, so it's good on fuel, and it was in entry-level vehicles and mostly trucks. So it was more about utility, cheap, and thrifty. Yeah.
And is it... I know you have an ironic sense of humor, and you underplay everything, but... was there ever any consideration given to saying, we're going to ask people to pay $200,000 for something that has the word thrift.
All I knew is that the trollers were going to chew my ass about it, and it just kind of was what it was.
Right. Like, but it's also kind of, with a name like Smuckers, you got to be good.
Yeah, exactly.
You know what I mean?
Right.
Because everyone else is like ZRXZR.
Right.
Limited.
It's a lot of R's in the
automotive
world. Same with the
derelict. You know, why are you going to spend that much money on a car? It's called
the derelict. Right.
Idiot.
So you do what you always do. You do the satin and the understated, and but it's the details, guys. You really got to see when we cut to the interior of the car.
Just
the steering wheel,
the mirrors, the door handles, just everything.
It's
is
always
just
the hardware. It's always just the brackets. I'm looking at the bracket on the steering column, which is a piece of machined aluminum with, you know, inset Allen bolts in there. It's amazing.
The gauge clusters look like you've got a machine of multiple layers.
I always love these trucks, the shape of them. I've restored 5 or 6 of them like dead stock. And within the first 2 miles of driving, I'm over it because they just suck. I mean, they don't steer, stop, accelerate. They just don't do anything very well, but they had such a cool look. And when this was still something I was trying to still call a hobby and pissing off all my neighbors in my house in Sherman Oaks, I was in the garage underneath one of these, literally stuck, trying to get the bed rails in the back. Mm-hmm. And some friends were coming over for lunch, and I just heard footsteps coming up the driveway, and I asked that first set of legs, could you give me a hand and pick up the back of this truck? And I climbed out and introduced myself, and that became my wife, Jamie.
Wow.
So they've always, like, there's something about this truck that's been important to me. So we bought one, and we laser scanned it from front to back using some of the studio technologies for CGI, where we can reverse engineer and get this into CAD immediately. And then that allowed us to engineer all the geek out points of, you know, all the CNC'd work and the nickel work and the redesign the dash and get modern HVAC and nav. And with this truck too, we kind of wanted to push the envelope in a sort of a soft entree, like you were saying, into cars. What's our first two-wheel drive, but it's still a truck. But performance wise we wanted to kind of push the envelope in more of a sports car direction, and then also more kind of modern car corruptions. So things like, you know, there's no visible switches or anything. It's all done. It's a CAN bus networked electrical system, and everything is controlled through a Kenwood touchscreen using Isis Power Electrical. So it's web enabled. It's a mobile Wi-Fi hotspot.
Yeah,
has power windows, but we didn't want to jump the shark and put your typical street rod switches.
I spoke to the guys at Isis, and they got some really, really cool.
Yeah, they're state of the art.
Completely rewired.
It has power windows.
Oh yeah,
but
there's no
cranks.
Yeah,
in there.
So we kept it looking old, but then you just nudge that crank up, it goes up, and you nudge it down, or you can do it from the remote.
The crank is the power switch.
Yeah. See, again.
And then like the rearview mirrors, those light up with the turn signal diodes like a modern car, but they're still the old school 40s peep mirrors.
You know, it's always I have this conversation with my wife, who I met when I was trapped under an El Camino, and she rushed to my. No, I say to her as it pertains to the houses, you know, I go, here's what you need to understand. Everything's little, the doorknobs, the hinges, the hardware, the baseboards, all little, and then it adds up to be one huge thing. So you go, save a couple bucks on the mirror. Well, don't worry about the gauge cluster. It's like, no, that's what makes it.
Yeah,
the
it
stuff
makes
that makes Jonathan's stuff so cool is every single little piece. And then, of course, it works the opposite way, too. When you start going, let's just save a couple bucks on this piece, that has a collective negative impact. So there's nowhere you can turn, even when you start sort of fishing around and looking for fasteners and hardware and all that.
Even in the bed, I see on the, looks like you stamped or put Icon into the.
Yeah,
into
that and the hubcap. So we got tricky there because I can't afford stamp tooling. Yeah, so we acid etched the steel.
The fender, I'm not real familiar with these trucks. Is that the stock shape?
Yeah, I didn't change anything about the body shape or proportions other than the tailgate.
Can we pop the hood and
Certainly.
Take a look at the engine?
Yeah.
And what size rim? We're talking about
17s? And then there's CNC billet, so we get the light weight and can fit the monster brakes because we're running 6-piston front, 4-piston rear Walwoods with ABS master.
And what were you doing for the suspension?
Art Morrison's my hero. So this is running
in
platform the best.
All
Art Morrison's chassis specific to this project. So TIG welded tubular independent front, four link rear using Johnny joints, not Himes. The new JRI tunable shocks. Good stuff. And then we're running a 5.3, which is part of GM's new E-Rod program. So it's a full emissions certified motor. And then
until you put the supercharger on.
No, it still is, because that's a CARB certified Magnuson air-to-water blower.
I see this basically, this computer over here is part of that ISIS.
Correct. So that's one of the sub-modules for the ISIS.
And the CAN,
and it's cool because, yeah, you've got
really
a master
cool system
and then two splits. And they're Cat 5 networked, and that's it. And then we just run 22 gauge wired all the circuits.
Yeah,
I
so
like
much
the security of using just black rubber hose.
Yeah,
it drives me nuts when I see a vintage race car
with
all
the purple anodized
blue.
Yeah.
No, it drives me nuts because you get this great. You're looking at the BMW Batmobile 3.5, whatever, 1973. Group 5, Hans Stuck drove it and all this, and it's an amazing piece of machinery, and then the hood's open, and you see all that silicone blue hosing everywhere, and I'm like, does it come in black? And they're like, well, yeah, you can get it in black, you gotta order it. And I'm like,
Order it.
It's so funny, like when we showed Freeman Thomas, the advanced design director at Ford, the first Bronco, his lift in the hood, he was chewing my ass because of the red Optima battery. He's like, he's like, you're better than that. I'm like, well, I can't like get custom batteries.
You can paint it.
Give me a
break,
but it won't last.
The great thing about Jonathan is you have the old school black rubber hosing, but the really cool high-end brackets and connectors and aircraft
and
crimp-on stuff and all the hose clamps and all the clamps and in general just really cool and really high-end.
Well, I want them to be utilitarian, so if they're just bling and they're not adding durability or longevity or function, then screw it. We just won't go there.
So what is something like this run base-wise, price-wise?
Well, what we're going to do with these, which is kind of something new for us, is I've learned from experience that designing it, developing it, and launching it is one thing. Then you have a whole another 50%, which is figuring out how the hell to build them remotely effectively. So this time we're just offering, we're selling five of them for 2014 production, and they're all balls out loaded. The client picks matte or shiny, what color, what bed wood, which color for the bison hide, blown or naturally aspirated, and a T56 six-speed or automatic. Otherwise, they come loaded, and they're 230 to 256 within the range of those options. Then from that experience, hopefully, we get remotely efficient and can find a more rational price point and pull out of the options out and give it a
it's slightly still, more realistic. You know, in a world, I always have this conversation, it sounds cheap for what you're getting.
It's one of these things you really just got to see, like every bolt head, everything.
It's a matter
on there
how you look at it. One guy says we're out of our mind and we're idiots and we're bankrupt. The next guy says, well, I had a truck like this built in a one-off shop and it was a half mil and it won't even idle and it sucks. So it's a no-brainer to him.
Well, but here's the deal. Like, you're going to make five, or you're going to sell five, right?
Yeah.
So you're doing it right. Price point's fine.
Yeah, exactly.
Maybe
and at five, like, we could almost have asked whatever, because there's always going to be five guys out there that are nutty enough to drink the Kool-Aid and hop in. But the irony is, even at that crazy money, I doubt the first five will even be profitable. There's so much that goes into
it. People
don't realize.
There's guys
nuts.
Getting one-off hot rods built all day long now, all
and
around the country,
digits,
that are, you know, $400,000.
So. I'm trying to put together a Paul Newman car that was already a car.
We took it all apart, put it back together, and it got really expensive.
But this, and again, like, it's the bench seat, but it's bison hide on
it's
it.
It's Tempur-Pedic foam.
It's crazy.
CNC'd hardware.
Well, let's can you fire it up for us?
Yeah, sure.
Matt, you stand behind.
Okay.
That's your job.
Although it's side exhaust, so.
Oh, look at this. Every bit. Look at that. Look at the lights. Every bit. I just love.
The fasteners are $14 each.
So if you keep your foot out of it, it's mellow. It's a short exhaust, but it's all TIG stainless ceramic coated with dual MagnaFlows and a crossover. And I may need to change that because that's too low. I think I'm going to have to go up and over and do a rear dump. So I'm bottoming out on that. That's the other cool thing, though, with this stance.
Sounds great.
JRI has this new system that, like, duh, why didn't someone think of that before?
where there's a hydraulic element that lifts.
Oh, there you go.
Sorry. That lifts the car independent of the coilover, just the mounting point, and you get 5 inches of control on the lift.
Just so it's not like airbags.
Brilliant.
The other thing that Jonathan does so well is, you know, you take an old car, and they didn't have any, especially a truck, they didn't have any rules back then, and now you have to have a light on your license plate, you have to have turn indicators, stuff like that, but it didn't exist in the past, so where do you put it so it works, but you don't really see it?
If you look
at the rear license plate, I can see that there's lights that illuminate the plate.
And your reverse lights go into the rail, but these lights
just look like cool little billet fasteners. And again, like what you've done with the turn indicator.
Look at the controls he has, just the lower.
Yeah, the originals, you know, they had the tailgate chains that would just sit there and clap and beat the shit out of the truck.
Right.
So these just go in, and then we did stainless elbow joints for that. I stole from the SLR, the SLR race, the black series. That's their gas cap, which I thought was sexy as all hell.
Yeah, and just put it right into the bed.
Yeah, then that allows me to put a 31-gallon stainless tank in the back with a factory GM fuel pump and sump and rollover valve and baffles, which helps with the weight. So, like, when we were autocrossing this thing, thank God I had a full tank, because with this much power, the ass just wants to come around.
Now, when I was talking to you at SEMA, you had your electric bike in the back.
Yeah.
Quickly tell us about the electric bike.
Okay. So this is a fun project that just kind of came together organically. I was up at the McCall's event up at Pebble Beach earlier this year, and I met this 22-year-old guy named Andrew who had come up with this design, and was literally, the paint wasn't dry on his first proto. We started talking. I dug what he was doing. He asked what I did. Turned out he was an Icon fan. I started helping him find resources for plating and powder and a sand caster and different details. And like 2 months into helping him, I was like, duh, we should do an Icon edition. So we launched this called the E-Flyer. So it's hydroformed aluminum frame. It has a 30-mile-an-hour top speed, 35-mile range, regenerative braking. And it just bugged me in that the electric bike world, they always look like kind of a Radio Shack dinosaur with hose clamp shit everywhere.
Yeah, right.
And I, again, like I said, I've been kind of stuck in this streamlined era.
Is this cast aluminum, or you machine it to make it look cast?
Like
you hit it with a
sand
bead
cast
blaster.
Aluminum and then media.
Okay.
And then that hides the BMS system and the battery. And then you're just power on, power off, and headlight function, and then your range indicator and the headlight. And they're just so much fun. We just started selling these.
What
last
do these
month.
Things sell for?
They're $49.95.
Wow. Wait a minute. $49K?
No, $4,995.
Okay, good.
$5,000. They're $5,000.
That's very reasonable.
Yeah, it's kind of right in the sweet spot for a good quality e-bike.
It's really nice, and again, Jonathan's just one of these guys where I. If you said Jonathan laid out your living room, or Jonathan picked out your daughter's prom dress, or
I don't know about that. But
no, you have an eye for design.
I mean, you do.
You're very good at it, and I love you because you're so detail oriented. And so, if you do a bicycle, it's gonna look cool. If you do a truck, it's gonna look cool. When you do a Saab, it's gonna look cool. And we'll talk off the air about your sandcaster, because I need something.
Of course,
aluminum. You'll probably know this. The old Los Angeles street lamps, the ones that had all the ornate beautiful. Whatever. I found a couple, which I love, but they're all couple of the spears are broken off, and I need a sand casting, and it's difficult. It's more difficult
that together.
than I thought. All right, Jonathan, why don't you throw out the website if anyone wants to go and just cruise and have a glass of wine and see some really cool stuff.
Icon4x4.com or iconelectricbike.com, and you're welcome to pick up the phone and give me a call, 818-280-3333.
And you go to our website, and you can check out all this stuff, because we're going to cover it very well.
All the photos will be up on our Facebook page as well.
So, until next time, this is Adam for Matt and Jonathan saying, keep the air in the spare and the bag in the wheel.